We're holding the bottom of Chavtet Amud Bet, and the Gemara had been quoting Rav Yochanan's advice. But Rav Yochanan said, if you have a professional weaver at home, then you could shake out your garments every day. And then the Gemara asked, what about our Mishnah that seems to say it's good for the garments? The Gemara said different answers. And once we've started with Rav Yochanan's advice, so the Gemara goes on to give other advice. Rav Yochanan said, better drink witch juice, the waters that witches set up, than tepid water, provided that it's in a metal vessel and that the water has never been boiled and that you haven't added any herbs. Meaning if it's in an earthenware vessel or you've added herbs or you've boiled it before, then it's not as harmful. Then it's not harmful at all. But if it's tepid in a metal vessel and it's never been boiled and there's nothing else in the water other than that, that's not good. Rav Yochanan then gives us monetary advice. He says, if you want to waste your money, this is what you do. Meaning, if you want to save money, don't do this. Linen clothing, expensive linen clothing, Roman linen clothing. Hire workers and buy white glass and hire workers to plow your vineyards and don't watch them. They'll ruin the animals and they'll ruin the vineyards. So the proper advice is don't do any of this and don't waste your money. We said that when you find the lost item, then you should spread it out for its own benefit, but not for your own honor. The Gemara questions were at the top of Lamed Amud Aleph, what if the garment needs it, plus you gain from it? So the Gemara tries to prove it from the Mishnah. The Mishnah had said you spread it out for its own benefit, seemingly indicating, but if it's for its benefit and my benefit, that would be prohibited. The Gemara says you can't say that because the conclusion of that sentence was, don't do it for your own honor, seemingly indicating the exact opposite. If it's for your honor plus the use of the vessel, that would be okay. So you see from the Mishnah, you can't indicate either way. The Gemara quotes a Braisa. The Braisa says, don't spread it out for your own benefit, but you could spread it out for its benefit, and if guests come, you can't spread it out even for its own benefit. That seems to indicate, even though you'll gain by spreading the mink over your bed, they'll think you're wealthy, but if you gain, then it's not kosher, even though the vessel needs to be spread out. The Gemara says no, because when you spread it out, because guests are there, they might come back to steal it, or there's ayin hara. That's a different reason. That's not the same concept. The Gemara brings another proof. This time the Gemara wants to bring proof from the case of Egla Arufa. We have two halachos in the Torah where an animal cannot be used. One is an egla arufa. It says, asher lo ubad ba. The egla has to be a calf that was never worked. And the other is a para aduma. Para aduma, asher lo ala aleha. All a cow, that a red heifer that was never worked either. So the braisa tells us, what happens if you take an egla arufa? You take a calf which you're ultimately going to use as an egla rufa, and you bring it into you bring it into the area where the animals are threshing their dash. Sure. The braisa says about an egla rufa. The egla, we said, you cannot be worked. What happens if you bring it into the threshing, the place where the animals are threshing, and the egla took a walk around the beams and it threshed? But you didn't do it for that. So then it's kosher. What happens if you brought it in and your intent was this calf will nurse and it will also thresh?
This is the calf that we're going to break its neck?
You're right. This is the calf that's going to be an egla rufa. So then the braisa says it's pasul. That your purpose was what? You wanted for the animal's gain it should nurse. Plus you were hoping while it walks it'll thresh a little bit. So you see that when you have this dual thought, when you think both for the sake of threshing and for the sake of nursing, so then that disqualifies it. So we want to indicate from there what would be in our case. So the Gemara says no. Over there, the fact that the Torah words it asher lo ubad ba, we derive from that mikol makom. In any case, however it was worked, if you wanna compare it, you have to compare it to the case of para aduma. Torah tells us, the Mishnah says, if you have a para aduma, that the animal, that a bird rested on its neck. So then the bird came down and landed on it. Is that considered that it carried anything? No. So the para aduma is still kosher. What about if a male cow mounted the female cow? So then we say that that disqualifies the female cow from being a para aduma. What's the logic behind it? So Rav Papa says, because the word ubad is written without a vav, asher lo ubad ba is written without a vav, it has to be that it was worked in a way as though you were oved, you yourself had done it, something that you would be happy with its doing. Ordinarily, the owner of a cow is very happy if that cow is going to have more children, more calves. So then we say that when the male cow, when the ox mounted the female cow, that's something you were happy with, and that's why it disqualified the cow. And bottom line, at the end of the day, we don't have a raya, we don't have proof. What would be if you gain and the object needs it? We go on, we quote a brisa. If you found a wooden vessel, so you use it so it doesn't rot. A copper vessel, you could use it even with hot water, but you can't use it on the fire because that'll wear it down. A metal vessel, so then you could use it only with cold water, because their metal vessels, when they were used with hot water, then they darken, they turn black. If you found some type of shovel, some type of plowing instrument, you could use them in soft area, in soft territory, but not something hard, because you'll wear down the instrument. What about if you found gold or glass vessels? So then you hold on to them, you put them in a safe area until you find the person who lost it, or Eliyahu HaNavi comes and tells you. By the same token, if you have a pikadon, someone tells you to watch an item for him, you also, this is the way you take care of it. The Gemara says, what's the connection? The connection is, we're talking about a pikadon that the owner left for a long time. So you have to do something with this pikadon, with this item, so that it doesn't rot. He left it for you to watch. Part of taking care of it is to ensure it doesn't rot while you're watching it. The Mishnah said, if you found something, if you found an item that you don't ordinarily deal with when it's your own item, you don't deal with your own garbage cans, your own sacks. You let your servants or your children or someone else deal with it. Do you have the obligation to return this lost object? So the Mishnah says you don't have to. What's the source for this? The Torah says when you encounter a lost object, you'll ignore it, the Torah says questioningly, via salamta. From here we derive, pamim shatam italim. There are times when you should ignore it. What are instances? A kohen, and it's in a cemetery, an old man, and it's beneath his dignity, or if his time is more valuable than the time it would take, then this object is worth. The Talmud asks, why do you need a pasuk for this? A kohen can't enter a graveyard for the mitzvah at any rate. Why, that's an assay and a los assay. You can't just perform an assay, a los assay, for the sake of someone's money, or even for the sake of the assay that's giving back a lost object. So you say, no, the Torah came to teach me a case where the value of your time is more than the value of the object, that then the mitzvah doesn't apply. In that case, that we don't need a pasuk for either, because the Torah says, ki lo ye becha evyon. Your loss precedes someone else's loss. So the Talmud, the Torah had to tell me v'salamta. The Talmud concludes to teach me the third case, the case of an older person that it's beneath his dignity. Rabba says, what happens if you started by shooing the animal in the right direction? You kick the animal, you told him, go home. So then you have to complete the mitzvah, bring it home. Abayi was once walking with Rabba and he saw goats that were lost. He threw a cloud of earth at them to send them home. Rabba told him, once you started, you have to bring them completely home. You can't say, well, I'm an old man, it's beneath my dignity. The Gemara asks, what about a case where in the fields where no one's seeing, so then it's not beneath your dignity, you take his lost object. But in the city where it is beneath your dignity, what do you have to do if you encounter it in the field and then you'll have to bring it back to the city? Are you supposed to do that or not? Imagine the chief rabbi finds a lost dog in the field. So in the field, he wouldn't mind taking the dog and bringing it back to the owner. But for him to walk back into the town and walking around with the dog, that's something that he doesn't usually do. So the Gemara concludes with a teiku. Rava says, the rule is that whatever you would take the time to deal with, if it were your own object, you have to do it for your friend. Whatever you take the time, if you're on a level where you would take the time to unload your own donkey, you have to help your friend with his donkey. Or your friend himself unload. But if it's something that you yourself wouldn't do for yourself, because it's something that you're in a position where that's beneath your dignity, so then you don't have to do it for others either. The Talmud quotes a story that Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi was walking down the street. Why? Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi was walking. He met.
For me, I would do it because my things are valuable. For other people, my
Well, then it's not you beneath your dignity. It's not a question of time. It's a question of dignity. Here the issue isn't the time.
If I deal with my own donkeys, then...
Yeah, if you deal with your own donkeys, don't say it's beneath your dignity to deal with others' donkeys. Seems obvious. Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi met a man who was carrying a heavy load. So the guy asked him, help me... The guy put down the load to rest, and then he said, help me load it. I want to pick it up on my shoulder. Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi was one of the sages of the time. He didn't want to stand there starting to carry heavy loads. So he asked him, how much is it worth? So he told him, half a zuz. So he gave him half a zuz. He bought it off of him. He said, I don't want to work with this sack, get myself all dirty. It's not something the chief rabbi does. I'll buy it off you. Pays him the half a zuz. After he pays him the half a zuz, he says, okay, I got nothing to do with it. It's hefker. Whoever wants can take it. So the guy starts picking it up again. So Shmuel Rabbi Yossi says, wait, I'll pay you for it again. He pays him the half a zuz, and he figures the guy's going to walk off. After he pays him the half a zuz, he says, it's hefker. The guy starts picking it up again. He said, I said hefker for everyone but you. The Talmud asks, wait a second, but that doesn't really work. That only works according to Beis Shammai, not according to Beis Hillel. The conclusion is it didn't work. It was a trick to get him not to carry the heavy load. Really, the guy could have taken it. The Talmud asks, then why did Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi do it? He was the elder of the time. It's beneath his dignity. He did it beyond the call of duty, like Rabbi Yossi taught, that the Torah wants us to do beyond the call of duty. And we're going to see that that's the fact that people didn't do that brought about the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. As Hashem, we're up to the Mishnah now, and we'll review now.
In Hebrew.
In Hebrew.